This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Wednesday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And it is April 1st. It is April Fool's Day. I don't celebrate or recognize it because, frankly, in this country lately, and especially in the state of Oregon, every day is April Fool's Day. So let's just call the whole thing off.
I wish there was more April Fool's Day, you know, when the governor's like, it's an emergency. Yeah. We need a gas tax. April Fool's. I'd be happy with that all the time.
Oh, it's all so silly. But there's so much to talk about. There's a lot of serious stuff going on. I want to welcome to the show for his first appearance on our show, and hopefully not his last, Ben Roach, Ben's Viewpoint at rightnoworegon.com. He also has a Substack where he's putting out some really good content that caught my eye. And I love this in his author bio. Cut through the spin, follow the facts, and tell it straight, even when it stings. Ben Roach, welcome to Newsmakers at Noon. It's great to have you.
Hey, I really appreciate you having me on. You know, I used to live in Salem. I graduated Silverton High School. So shout out to your listeners. I appreciate you getting me on board here. I've been an Oregon resident since 1989. Yep. I've raised six kids in Oregon. I got four grandkids. Wow. And I'm just really passionate about making sure we can make Oregon a better place where my grandkids can grow up.
Amen. Same here. Same. Mm-hmm. Both Hunter and I are in that same boat, and we feel the same way. Your latest article that dropped yesterday, apathy is the real threat to Oregon elections. And Hunter and I talk about this on the show a lot. There's a narrative out there. There are two narratives out there. So you know what I'm going to do? You've got this. Your subheadline is two competing strategies, one shared goal, and a growing problem we're creating ourselves. Unpack that for us, Ben.
So, you know, when we're trying to fight the system that we have to go to the polls with, which is Oregon's vote by mail, and I don't like calling it vote by mail. I like calling it the paper ballots that we turn into our election clerk. We have decentralized 36 counties where we turn paper ballots into our clerks, and they're the ones that are required to count and secure our elections. And that decentralized system has been in place since the year 2000, and it was voted very popularly, 70% of support by Oregon voters. But as we're trying to dismantle this system with initiative petitions like IP37, mm-hmm. the End Vote by Mail campaign, what they're doing is they're amplifying apathy.
Yeah.
Let's look at election turnout. You know, in a presidential election, we get 72 to 75% of turnout. But in these primary elections that we're about to have here in May, turnout drops to 30 to 40%.
Yep.
In local special elections, like municipal elections, when we elect our city councilors, mm-hmm. That's as low as 20%. School boards, yep. 17, 18%. That's the apathy that's losing elections for Oregonians who really want to see government that works for the people.
So you see the same narratives that Hunter and I see out there. Well, you know, until vote by mail ends, and then you've got people. So you've got one side saying it's vote by mail. You've got the other side saying, but get out there and vote. We gotta make it too big to rig. But you've got, those are two competing messages that sort of self-defeat each other.
Absolutely. The End Vote by Mail group is trying to attack the Oregon Republican Party from within. Mm-hmm. We're beating ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the Oregon Republican Party is just simply saying, this is the tool we have to win, and that's our existing election system. And so they're pushing a get out the vote message, which is what we need to do, because we must get people out and choose. If we look at the primary back in 2022, I just looked this up, the candidate nominated had less than 25% support of all Republican voters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We split it far too many ways in the primary, and very few people show up with a very low, like I said, 30 to 40% turnout. So if we actually choose strong candidates that can win like we did in the 1980s, mm-hmm. and have strong universal candidates that can win. Generally, Republicans could actually win races. And instead, groups like the End Vote by Mail claim that the reason we lose races is because the system is rigged. It can't be both. I do believe there's fraud. I'm not a denier of election fraud.
Sure.
What I do have to recognize is the apathy is actually greater than any evidence of fraud.
Well, and you actually went and talked to a county clerk and kind of got a walkthrough of the process. So tell us what you learned. It was what, Linn County?
Linn County, yes. Yeah. So I live in Albany, Oregon. I was the chair of the Linn County Republican Party of about 63,000 registered Republicans. from 22 to 24. So I actually spent quite a bit of time in the clerk's office. Our past late great Steve Druckenmiller, a county clerk, was very instrumental in the implementation of Oregon's paper balloting system. Linn County was one of the front runners in getting that system secure and safe. So when I met with Clerk Ritchie just yesterday, we had the opportunity to talk about some of these latest things, including as recently as Trump's executive order. And the executive branch doesn't control our elections. Mm-hmm. Our elections are controlled locally by 36 individual county clerks. All but one are elected by the people, and in Linn County, elected by primarily Republicans.
Same in Marion.
Our election process, they secure these ballots, they're paper ballots, validated by signature. They use the same signatures on your ID. So when you say that there's no ID in Oregon, that's not exactly true. The clerk has a record of your DMV ID. They look at your driver's license when they verify the signature on your ballot. So they're checking IDs. And then they keep those paper ballots and audit them with a hand count after the election. So there's a selected hand count audit that checks the veracity of those elections. So while there's work to do in election integrity, the idea that there's rampant fraud and the system is rigged from the inside out is just patently false.
So your bottom line basically is it's not beyond repair. So burning it down isn't the answer to it.
Absolutely not. In fact, if you read the end vote by LIQ 37 statement, they want to count all elections at the precinct level by 8 p.m. on election day.
Yeah.
And count tens of thousands of ballots in places like Multnomah County, where they're proudly displaying communist flags, and are outnumbered Republicans 10 to 1 in Multnomah County. And Multnomah County, down in Eugene, Ashland, Bend, these are Democrat strongholds, and they want to relinquish electoral control to those precincts and those high population districts. I say no to that.
Hmm. Interesting. So where do you come down? Because I don't know if you remember, it was ballot measure 88, driver's cards for illegal aliens, where Oregon voters overwhelmingly, with the exception of Multnomah County, no surprise there, said, no, we don't want that. Then the legislature turned around and said, we don't care what you want. We're doing it anyway. So is that being a driver's card being a valid ID? Do you have concerns about that? Is that really a valid ID? Because some people are concerned about that.
Well, where it comes down to is attestation of citizenship versus verification.
Right. Yes.
So if the DMV is doing their job and what they're supposed to do, and we've already had evidence that they have not. So again, this is an area of reform that is greatly needed. I don't disagree. Mm-hmm. But in the DMV, they must verify that citizenship. And unfortunately, we have no national database. We're giving Social Security numbers to resident legal immigrants, and they're not eligible to vote, but they have a Social Security card and they have a Social Security number. Mm-hmm. We don't have a way. And this is where Trump's executive order actually is a good idea in terms of creating a national database of who's here legally, who's here as a citizen and eligible to vote, who's not, and who should be, you know, seeking legal status. We don't have any way to track that. And so our county clerks are resort to that attestation. And that's where there's a problem. We need to give them the tools to properly make sure our voter rolls only have eligible voters.
Yeah, and with people's, you know, sort of faith and trust in the systems at an all-time low, reforming that would go a long way towards, you know, giving people confidence, a little more confidence anyway, in the integrity of the elections.
Absolutely. And so that's where there are some areas of reform I totally support. Also, returning Election Day to Election Day, passed a bill that where we extend the receipt of those ballots up to 7 days after Election Day, and that also is something that was done during COVID under an emergency. Mm-hmm. And that should be repealed. I think there could be bipartisan support for that.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. And you're talking about House Bill 3291 that was passed in 2021. That always has just that's been a stinker to me. You don't want to go ahead, Hunter.
No, I totally agree with that one. I'm just sitting here going, you know, watching the news this morning, listening to Dan Rayfield and Tina Kotek talk about how amazing our elections are and this and that. And I go, in 2021, you changed it to extend it. And I'm going, if it was so great and so secure and so wonderful, why the need to extend it? And it's those little things that sow that seed of doubt into the Oregonians in our election integrity.
You nailed it. And that's exactly what's happened. In fact, I believe Democrats want Republicans to believe it's rigged. They benefit more than that.
Well, I go to every election we have, whether it's local, state, or federal, afterwards, you hear a whole lot of news reports about the amount of Republicans that didn't vote. Mm-hmm. And the media beats you over the head with it. And you know, us, we get frustrated by the Republicans didn't vote. But at the same time, now the other Republicans are listening to this message going, well, then why did I waste my time voting?
Oh, absolutely. And I looked up those numbers just recently, and I'll see if I can get them in front of me while we're talking here without accidentally impacting our call here. But there's actually quite a few that didn't vote, especially in the primary. Mm-hmm. And that's really troubling, because when you have people that just don't turn out and you have a smaller people supporting the candidate that will be on the ballot in November, then that impacts that turnout in November when we really need to get people out to vote.
Amen. Amen. Let's go ahead and take our first break, Ben. Then you can go ahead and look those up while we're on a commercial break. Again, we're talking with Ben Roach, Ben's Viewpoint, right now, Oregon.com and his Substack. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and the Perlin Mill.
All righty. Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us on this Wednesday. We're wrapping up our conversation today with author, writer, Ben Roach. So, Ben, we took a quick break. You were going to look up some numbers. Were you successful?
Yes. What I was looking at is the actual Republican turnout for the last primary election in 2022. Only 37.8% of all registered voters turned out for that election. But when you look at the Republican turnout, only 54% of registered Republicans participated in their own primary. So just a little over half are choosing the nominee for the general election. For example, the choice that the Christine Drazen, who did win with 85,000 votes, but that 85,000 votes was only 21.75% of the total Republican turnout. So only, you know, roughly one out of five Republicans even chose our nominee. So I'm just hoping that this time we can whittle it down to maybe three candidates, and we can choose one of the top of those three candidates here in May.
And then coalesce around the ultimate winner in the primary, and instead of so much of what we see is taking their ball or taking their marbles and going home, and that's frustrating. I think it's time. I think people have a sense that there is a lot at stake here. They have that gut sense that things are not right and something needs to change. There's a lot of people out there following what Nick Shirley has been doing in Minnesota. Of course, he's exposing a lot of fraud in California. I see a lot of people tweeting at him and hashtagging him, come to Oregon, come to Oregon. You've got a piece out here basically saying, stop waiting for a hero. You know, wouldn't it be great if Nick Shirley showed up in Oregon? But your take on this is, why wait?
Why wait? We can all be Nick Shirley. You know, the government accountability is directly proportional to citizens' presence. You know, the most of our government decisions are made in rooms with really low attendance. You and I talked in the pre-vest over here about attending school board meetings or attending city council meetings. Mm-hmm. You know, when I last attended a city council meeting, I was the only one speaking on the issue of anybody in the whole city. And the issue was actually quite caustic on social media. That's why I went to that particular city council meeting. But very few people actually show up in person. So you need to show up in person. And that's what Nick Shirley does. He shows up in person and he asks questions. And we can all do that as citizen journalists. As just good citizens, ask your school board directors why they're doing what they're doing if you don't like what's going on. We saw some of that during the COVID shutdown. We need more of that today.
Yeah, yeah. And you're right in here, too. He didn't show up with a badge, a subpoena, or some insider clearance. He showed up with the public records, a camera, and a willingness to walk into the place. And I think the key word there is the willingness to walk into places most people scroll past. You've got to get up off the couch and get out from behind the keyboard and actually go out and talk to people. And that's literally all he did. And he filmed it.
Yeah, absolutely. And showing up to not just the city council meeting, but be a part of a budget committee, mm-hmm. be a part of a citizen activity board. We talk a lot about housing. My day job, I'm a housing advocate. I help provide affordable housing. I sell manufactured housing. And where we see when we're talking about zoning restrictions and permitting restrictions, we see a lot of people trapped where they can't get a building permit. But you need to go to the planning department. You need to go to those planning meetings. You need to meet with your city council and be the change that you want in your local community.
It's so important at the local level. We've seen the same thing. The left, the activated left, the activists on that side are very well mobilized. They get their people activated. They communicate effectively. They present, half the time they'll present you with talking points, and they always show up, and they are the loudest in the room, which can be intimidating. But we need to get past that. If somebody calls you a name, so what? Because whoever is in the room with the loudest voice tends to get their way.
Yeah, you know, when you get more detailed, you know, and when you get in front of people and you ask them, government works a lot differently when people are in the room. You need to show up, and you just need to be there and ask those questions. And sometimes you can get a meeting. I think, you know, I talked about your mayor of Salem. I had coffee with the mayor of Albany, Oregon. He's a great guy. He's a Democrat. I'm a Republican. We get along on many issues. He's very pro-housing. He's very pro-business. So we can agree on things that can actually move the needle for the citizens of Albany. But it takes those coffee conversations, and people need to be willing to just ask your mayor, can you come have a meeting? Or ask your city councilor, can we talk about something that's bothering me about my neighborhood?
Yeah, and frankly, that's what they're there to do. I mean, they are the, you know, the level closest to the people. You're going to run into them at the deli counter at Fred Meyer, and chances are, and you're right, they do represent you, and they should fully expect to hear from you. It's a relationship, after all.
So we can all be that, Nick Shirley. We can all go out and hold our, you know, be respectful, treat people with respect, and you'll get respect back. Be open to conversation, send polite emails, and ask for those appointments in person, because there's a hierarchy of communication that if you do so face-to-face where you can see people's facial expressions and then sincerity, you're going to get a lot more done than an angry comment on Facebook.
And who's going to see it but everybody inside your own, you know, your own social media circle? I can guarantee you the mayor, whoever it is you're complaining about, chances are they're not going to see it.
Oh, and you're so right. I thank you for bringing that up. The bias confirmation on social media is real. And divide and conquer is what's happening with social media. We're all divided into our own self-bias-confirming bubbles, and we're not listening across the aisle or listening to people. We're talking past them.
Yeah, and look where it's gotten us. I mean, we're absolutely so siloed. And I really like that, and getting back to breaking bread with somebody, sitting over a table, and like you said, looking into their eyes, looking at facial expressions, looking at body language, so much more beneficial. But it's the easy default to go over there and just pound out something on your keyboard on Twitter or X or Facebook.
One of my proudest accomplishments is I went across the aisle to the chair of the Linn County Democrats, and we came up with a joint resolution between the Linn County Democrats and the Linn County Republicans to honor the late Steve Druckenmiller, our county clerk, because he deserved it for 30, 40 years of excellence in our county. And that hangs on the wall in the Linn County Clerk's office as a tribute to bipartisan unity and understanding. And the integrity that's needed in the office of our county clerk. We can reach across the aisle and come up with common ground, but we've got to do it with dignity, with respect for each other, and we've got to do what we can for Oregon. Like I said, I want this state to be better for my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's so, and it's interesting because when you do, you can get things done, and I've always found that we, even the other side, and I don't even like calling it necessarily the other side, just a different point of view, a different looking at the same problems, maybe having different solutions. But we have a lot more in common than we think we do. And when you sit down in person with somebody and have that conversation, kudos to you for doing that. We need to have more of that. And we used to. That's the thing. We used to.
One of my favorite quotes to live by is Ronald Reagan. He said, 80% is my friend and ally, not 20% my enemy.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the things, too, you have been, you call out the Republican side as well. Have you been getting any pushback? Have been people open to hearing maybe a little, let's call it constructive criticism?
The reasonable folks are absolutely understanding of this perspective and my point of view. It's the unreasonable folks that want to stand on their one bias-confirmed bubble where they believe everything they read on social media is the truth. And so when you put facts and reason in front of them and give them the evidence, then they start to come around. And that's where we need to be fact-based. And I try to be on my Substack, Ben's Viewpoint, on the Substack platform. Mm-hmm. I try to be truthful, but also include an index of links and where I got my sources.
Yeah.
And that way you can do your own research.
Yeah, we try to do that as well. And we will be sharing this on our social media and when the podcast is up. And I did notice that on your latest article, you had quite, I had to scroll a bit to get through your citation list of where you were pulling your information from. So that obviously adds credibility to it. It's not just your opinion.
Absolutely. You know, and I'm also plugging a little bit of my own previous writing on the subject, because a lot of times I'm repeating the same talking points, but at different angles and with different, you know, current events that fall into place. I'm interested to see the conversation about Trump's recent executive order and what people are saying about that. But I also like to let it settle and simmer a little while before I jump in. I don't want to be the first one. It's not about being first. It's about what's right.
Amen. Amen. We've got less than 2 minutes, Ben. Anything that's you know, on the horizon, anything we should be paying attention to that perhaps we're not?
What I really could use is support for one of my personal initiatives that we're working on is to repeal water access permits. Then you can go to letuspaddle.com and learn what that's all about. We want to bring liberty back to the waters and eliminate the $20 permit fee to operate a paddleboard. And that's letuspaddle.com. So I'd like people to look at that as well. That's one of the things I've done is I'm trying to learn about the citizens' initiative petition process, how that works, how it's done legally, and how we the people can actually utilize direct democracy to change things that we may not be happy with in government.
And honestly, that one, when that the whole thing, because we've been following the Let Us Paddle and what you've been doing there as well, but when that is like the absolute ridiculous of this, you can't take your float tube down there or your inner tube and you've got to pay a fee. That is a nonpartisan issue. So that one should be a no-brainer.
Yeah, but we do need some money to get that to happen. We're very few on donations. People that can't afford a $20 permit can't afford to give $1,000 to a political action committee. So if you go to our website and donate, those $5, $10, $20 donations will go a long way to pay for postage across the state. Because we got people sending petitions from Klamath Falls to Burns and to the coast all over to me. And I'm the one that's collecting all those petitions and turning them into the Secretary of State. So could use the help.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, we're just about out of time with you, Ben Roach. Again, thank you for coming on. Ben'sviewpoint.substack.com. We will link all that up in show notes. Yeah, let's do this again, Ben.
Thank you. Great, great being on. Appreciate it.
All right, everybody, we're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Come on back on the other side.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us on this Wednesday. Great to have Ben Roach on here. Again, the website is rightnoworegon.com, where his work appears, or bensviewpoint.substack.com, and also letuspaddle.com for that all the information on that ridiculous fee thing that if you want to put your little rubber ducky into the Willamette River, you got to pay a fee. It's just so stupid.
Well, I love the thoughts from our government in the state of Oregon. We are what, 80% full on Mother Nature, woodlands, waterfronts, this and that. They're already charging you now parking fees if you want to go to any of these parks, you know, exorbitant parking fees. And now let's add on, you know, if you have a body of water and you want to throw something in there, well, now you got to pay us a little extra too.
And the beauty and the recreation and all the natural beauty, you know, an hour from the coast, especially in Salem, an hour from the mountains, an hour from the coast, an hour from the big city. After a while, that becomes less and less and less of one, something that's going to keep you here when you just are taxed out of your mind and you can't afford it anymore. So, again, kudos to him, to Ben Roach, for doing that. Okay, so there was a forum last night, speaking of local elections and everything. The Salem Reporter hosted a forum at the Elsinore Theater. And me, your humble correspondent, I watched it.
Congratulations. And, you know, what did it take to get through it? That's the real question.
A little bit of Malbec, but not a lot. Not a lot. The mustache and I both watched it. My overall impression was, number one, I'm glad that they had the forum. It looks like all of the city council candidates were there. Mm-hmm. The mayor was not there. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But the Vanessa Nordyke, who's the current councilor for Ward 7, who is also running for mayor, was there and kind of had the Vanessa Nordyke show last night, as she's the only one who showed up. So there you go. What I noticed with the all the other, there are very stark differences between the council candidates. Manny Martinez was there. He spoke very well. The format was fine. The format was they presented their positions. I think they had 5 minutes each, which is an eternity in these things.
Oh,
so, yeah, that's a long time. And then each ward, each candidate was given a question and they had the questions in advance, so they had their answers prepared. I'm kind of 50-50 on that. I kind of would have liked to see how they go off the cuff. I think that would have been important to see, but they were prepared. So each one of them, they had, all of them were different. The questions were okay. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't learn a lot. But what you did see was a different visions, very, very different visions for the direction of Salem going, where you had the challengers really saying that the status quo is not working. Manny Martinez was especially effective in that. I thought Betsy Vega did a really great job. Deanna Gwynn is running for re-election. She did a lovely job. And she does have a challenger, an individual. What is his last name? Was Inbody? Never heard mm-hmm. of him before. He's a government guy. So all in all, I mean, I know who my mind wasn't changed.
No,
at all.
No.
And yours wouldn't have been. And I don't think anybody's was, but it was a good chance to hear from the candidates. If maybe you were on the fence, you've got, in Ward 2, which is currently, held by Linda Nishioka. I sense some defensiveness on her part because Manny's a very effective candidate. Same thing with, Ward 8. Because the counselor there, Mickey Varney, had walked out of a meeting. And I'm glad that Chris Cummings brought that up. And he did. Because that needed to be, you don't walk out on a meeting. Grow up.
Yeah, you're there to represent your ward. And when you walk out of a meeting, you are no longer representing your ward at all.
Yeah, you're not. You're not. So go ahead.
Well, if you just sit there with your arms crossed and looking agitated, that's more representation than walking out the door.
It's petulant and childish, but sure, sure. Mm-hmm. So then the segment that ended, I turned it off, and I've spoken enough about that. I wasn't interested. I would never vote for Vanessa Nordyke for mayor. A lot of people may. Mm-hmm. I did have I have concerns though that Mayor Hoy did not show up because it was prefaced by Les Zeitz, who was moderating, that she was reached out to, and it allowed him to explain why, not Mayor Hoy to explain why. So he got to sort of a little bit editorialize on that, a little bit like, you know, Ben was saying, a little bit of body language. The choice of words was set by him. And she, something about she didn't feel it was fair the last time when she was debating former Mayor Hoy, Chris Hoy, didn't like the way. And that's fine. I get that. My problem with that is at this level with limited forums and the voters want to hear from you, I think you kind of need to get past that and you need to show up. I think it was a mistake not to show up.
Well, yeah. And of course, everything coming out the other side, Statesman Journal articles and others,
yeah,
you know, they're really framing it as the current mayor just didn't show up. And, you know, Vanessa Nordyke did. And unfortunately, that's the narrative they're going to get. Yep. They're going to get that narrative all day long.
Yeah. So I think there are other forums coming up. So it's not a deal breaker. It's not the end of the world. But I don't know. And then they said, you know, when I guess she had been asked what she was doing and she was out campaigning and door knocking, which is totally legit. But you just have to look at how that is perceived out in the larger community. And there have been some issues and controversies during her tenure that, you know, maybe needed to be addressed. And again, this is full disclosure. I did not watch the Nordyke segment.
Sorry.
I think there's enough Malbec for that. But
that could have doubled the intake, tripled the intake.
I know. I would have been like, I'm tired. So anyway, all kidding aside, I think candidates for these races need to be at these forums. Mm-hmm. I think they do need to be. And whether, you know, you have a chance, then you set the narrative, you answer the questions, you drive how things are perceived about you, what the public thinks about you. I was getting some messages from some friends who were kind of concerned about that. So maybe just, you know, that's my two cents on it. I don't run the campaigns or anything like that. But as a, you know, as a constituent, as a voter, I think you need to be there. So I know there's a chamber forum coming up, and I believe they will both be there. I don't know about any others. I'm sure there are others. I mean, we're getting down to the wire here.
Yeah, we're, you know what, a month and a half away from primary election day, which also is the day we decide who our mayor and representatives will be. We need to keep that in talking about, you know, voter apathy. We can't afford voter apathy at this point.
No.
We need people to get out there and cast their ballots. We need record turnout for a primary election to, you know, at least carve out our little savior here in Salem, even if Oregon itself continues its death spiral.
You know, and I 100% agree with you. And it was, you know, when Ben ran down those numbers, that's really, it's kind of depressing when you see how low the turnout is on elections that really mean a lot. Now, I want to kind of tack over because as far as showing up at forums, there's, and I don't know the name of the group, there is some forum. want to say it's, I think it's happening at the Grand Theater. I don't have all the details. I've been kind of following it. It's a media group that put it on. And initially it was advertised that Dudley, Deal, Bethel, and Medina were all going to be there. And Ed Deal and Chris Dudley have since backed out of that. Hmm. So there's, again, controversy on that. Where do you decide what forums you show up at? How do you make those decisions? How do you deal with the ramifications of that, how that plays out in sort of the broader populace, the voting populace? So it happens a lot. People have conflicts. Mm-hmm. And then people decide maybe it's not worth my time to be there. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, ironically, you know, you said Dudley and Deal have supposedly backed out, but Christine Drazen's name wasn't even in there in the first place.
Oh, wait. Oh, sorry. Okay. I misspoke on that. She was approached. Okay. See, again, this is all in show prep. She was approached. She initially declined because she did have a scheduling conflict. Okay. My apologies for that.
No.
So the five of them, there really are five that have any chance of, and I'd really like to see it down to three, but right now there are five.
Well, in going back to what Ben was saying about the 2022 primary election, where Christine Drazen won with, you know, 20%, you know, one fifth virtually of Oregon Republicans voting for her, there's a different feel this time around. And yeah. I wonder if the news recognizes the scenario we're in, because 4 years ago, they literally propped up 19 candidates.
Yeah.
And Christine Drazen had every shot to win as the 19th name on that list who got two votes, him and his mother, you know. And I'm sitting here going, this time around, I'm only feeling the conversation around those five candidates, which I think is a big plus in terms of the primary. Now we just got to get out and vote for the best of those five candidates and who we think can win come November.
And that's, I think, a key distinction. And we've talked to a number of people. We talked to Mark Anderson about that one poll he put out, and I've talked to a number of other. And I think Ben kind of echoed that a little bit today. It needs to be a strategic vote. I don't know. I think we're kind of past where, you know, vote for who makes you feel warm and fuzzy, who you like their personality, or they have nice hair. I mean, okay. I know people who have voted on that.
Well,
that
see,
way.
And I'm not a fan of the idea of voting by feels, because that just seems to be like a Democrat thing. You know, vote by feels. Which one has the purplest hair? That's who you No, vote logically. You're a Republican because you actually think a little bit. You're a Republican because you're a thinker. You know, R for research. And I'm going, you got to sit there and go, okay, who has the best shot of winning? And if you come down to two or three, then go to object number two, which could be, I like this person personally the best. You know,
and the other, yes. And then the other side of that is vote. And I thought with the, you know, apathy is the real threat. And we've been, I mean, I feel like we've been beating that drum for a very, very long time, that voter apathy and a lot of that messaging is coming from inside the house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very concerning where you've got those two competing messages. And frankly, the apathy message, that's winning, where you have people go, it just doesn't matter. I see that constantly. Or it's all rigged and vote by mail. And until that happens, I'm not voting. What a self-defeating message. Well, and it's not pushed back on in many cases.
Well, it's the same idea. We talk about, you know, one issue voters who refuse to vote for somebody because of a single issue. But by not voting for that person, you're throwing your virtual power over to the person who doesn't believe a single thing you believe.
Yeah.
You know, and I just get so frustrated with that. I understand how May operates. May is a very busy month. School's got less than a month left in it. The weather's starting to change. There's more things going on outside. It is a very busy time of the year, but we need to slow it down just enough to, when that ballot comes in the mail, fill it out and either drop it off or send it back out. You know, don't just put it in the stack of I'll get to it later and forget fully about it.
And remember, the gas tax thing is going to be on there. Mm-hmm. I forget the number. Is it 120? Maybe, 20? Whatever. Right. I'll find it. We'll post it.
Way too much.
that's on there. Who will be your mayor? That's on there. Now, regardless of whatever you feel on the forum or anything like that, look at their records. Julie Hoy has a record as mayor. Mm-hmm. Vanessa Nordyke has a record as a counselor. Look at those. Put aside, you know, the more personal stuff or, you know, this, that, or the other, and the spin and all that stuff. The other one is look at who's giving them money and who's endorsing them. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you look at the candidates again. You want to look at a lot of campaign speech is big, bold, broad, and not very realistic. Mm-hmm. So really understand, you know, what it is that a city councilor can do, what a mayor can do, what a governor can do. We talked about that yesterday from with the post from Tony Aiello. It's kind of limited. So, you know, educate yourself. That R should be for research. Absolutely.
We complain so much about scope creep from our government.
Yeah.
And yet we get into campaign season and we expect our governor or our mayor or our counselor to scope creep to the moon and back. And I'm going, let's be realistic. I mean, do a little test. Take the names out of the equation. Sit there and look at their statements and what they believe and where their perspectives. And if they have a record, you can compare records. Leave the names out. Pick and choose based on those simple factors of who will represent you the best.
You mean look at policies.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's so unsexy. It's so boring. But you really, I mean, honestly, I'm hoping people are getting the message that you want to vote for individuals that are going to pursue and put in policies into place that make your life, your children and your grandchildren's life better. Not that feel good. And but I don't know. I don't know if we're any different than we were from 2022. I don't know.
Yeah. There's only one way we're going to find out.
Yeah.
And that's again, election day.
That is election day, which I will be up. Yeah, we'll be up all night following that. Okay, let's go ahead and take our last break. You are listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Salem Clinic Urgent Care in Cozy's New York Deli.
Okay, so cool, exciting stuff. I've had this live stream going all morning as I was getting ready for the show today. Artemis 2, the crew launches today at, I think, 3:30 our time, 3:30-ish our time. So, should get the details on that.
Well, I was hearing 3 o'clock our time, so 3:30 wouldn't surprise me too much, simply because there's a lot of things going on when you're launching a space shuttle.
Yeah, and I was watching the crew. It's a 4-person crew, 3 guys and a girl. And I like how they brought him out. They had him in height. she just looks so it's interesting. So I don't know a whole bunch about him. I did a little bit on one. I don't know if he's the captain. He's the black gentleman who was very impressive. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're kind of touting sort of the historical, and I don't care about that.
Yeah.
No, I want to know what they're going to do up there. I'm excited about the mission and the work they're going to do for all mankind.
Yeah.
Watching
the news this morning, the DEI aspect is what they chose to highlight. It was so frustrating because they're like, there's a black astronaut and a woman astronaut and a Canadian astronaut. And I don't know anything about the fourth guy because obviously he must just be a cis male.
Which I hate that. I will never use those terms. It doesn't exist.
I use it mockingly because it's a waste of my time.
So, but if you are interested, NASA has a feed out there and you can kind of watch it all. Like, obviously, I don't have it on right now, but the second we're off air, I'm turning it back on. But we will be watching that. And we talked about it yesterday. This is exciting. I mean, this is going to set the pace. They got 10 days. They're going around. This basically is setting us up for future exploration to Mars, to places far beyond our little, you know, our little rock, third rock from the sun. And it's exciting. And frankly, not enough people are talking about it. And I don't know how much is being talked about it in school because I don't know. Are your kids... Do they know about this?
I have no idea. I'll have to check with them and find out if it's anything being talked about in school because it is.
Well, you can share it with them, are the schools doing it?
Well, that's why I'll ask before I'll share and find out what they know because, you know, these kinds of space explorations have been a big deal. And all of a sudden, we just kind of paused them out of the way. And here we are launching a spaceship to literally fly around the Earth and fly around the moon and come back. And I'm going... This is a big deal. This is something that can set the pace for decades to come. And I look forward to the excitement of their return in 10 days.
I wonder if we're going to get something like Tang out of this one. I remember getting in like breakfast cereals. They had like the little lunar car thing that they had up there and you'd get it. And you'd have to put it together. It all came like in a flat thing and you'd get it out of your Cap'n Crunch or whatever. And all the cool toys that we all got. And of course, those disgusting spaceman sticks. They were so gross. But I ate some. I did.
Well, you had to. You're a fan, you know. You got to try it, even if it, you know, makes you regurgitate. Thank goodness for gravity, right?
Right. Exactly. We had talked about this with Ben earlier in the show. Video out there on X, President Trump delivering on his promise to secure the sanctity of your vote. Again, that's the federal level. State level is a different cat.
Yep. And of course, this is going to be challenged by a number of states.
Oh, yeah.
First and foremost, I think.
Oh, no.
List is
Governor Kotek's going to go, great, thanks.
Yeah.
Let's get this going.
Yeah,
how can we make it better for Oregonians?
Yeah. Fighting Trump on everything. That's the way she makes it better for Oregonians.
That's what we care about.
You want to give us a tax cut? We're going to give you the taxes right back. Come on.
And then, of course, you've got Birthright Citizen in front of SCOTUS right now. I don't know that any decision has been released.
I doubt it. No, they're saying it's going to be June before the decision.
Okay,
out.
Yeah.
But I did see a little clip of Ketanji Jackson's comments. And she is relating birthright citizenships to stealing wallets in China.
In Japan. And that way, if she stole a wallet in Japan, she gets put into...
Yeah. She's subject to their laws.
This woman does not belong on the bench. Well, she just doesn't.
No, and I sit here and go, everywhere, if you go and break their local laws, whether you're there legally, illegally, or anything else, you are subject to... arrest and trial at that point.
It doesn't make you a citizen. And if you know a hostile, say, you know, the Chinese army brought over 200 pregnant Chinese women, and does that make them citizens? It's archaic. It needs to end. It just needs to stop.
Yeah.
It needs to be done with. But I don't know. And they're saying Amy Coney Barrett is going to be the one to decide that, which gives me a little really.
I'm just going, you know, I see the arguments on both sides, but at the same time, it's a system that has been so exploited with virtually. I mean, we know for a fact that there, I think, a Chinese travel agency virtually that's designed to bring pregnant women here to have American citizen children.
Yeah, it's a tourism, birth tourism. Come drop your baby on the shores of America. And then, you know, it just needs to stop. The original need for it is long past due, and it needs to be over. No other civilized country in the world does this. And they look at us and go, what the hell's wrong with you people?
Yeah.
Are you mad?
Probably. Well, just because everything's about feelings. It's all about the feelings. And I'm just, we need to start thinking as an independent nation and go, you know, the fact that we allow people just free and reign access if they can get across a border to have a baby is insanity.
Yeah. So we'll be following this. I'm digging into my leftovers. We got about a minute left.
A little over.
We didn't get to talk about this one. And this one's kind of scary because we're all talking about AI and everything. This was the grandmother spent 6 months in jail after AI wrongly identifies her for bank fraud in a state that she's never been in. I was looking at this morning. It's like, we haven't talked about this. This one gives me the creeps because this can happen to any of us.
Yeah. And that's the way technology operates now. You know, good things and bad things come out of it. But
yeah.
It's so easy to exploit. You know, I wonder when you're talking about online, how much we do online, passwords, things like that. How hard is it to create an AI version of you that somebody could utilize for your face identification? I mean, we're in that kind of technology advancements now where is anything truly secure when a woman can spend 6 months in prison because an AI identified her and she had never been there.
Wrongly. Mm-hmm. And again, I use AI. I use Grok. It's been helpful for certain things, but you have to wonder at what point there's a fine line there. And how do you know when you cross it? It's like, so I'm very mindful of this, but this one kind of gave me the creeps because I don't know how you defend yourself against this.
Yeah.
Well, Grok says you were there.
Well,
anyway,
maybe your cell phone ping. That might have to be.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway. All right. We're going to link up everything that we talked about with Ben today in show notes. So be sure to check that out in a couple of hours. We will see you tomorrow. Have a great day.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.